each and every Monday. As you guys know, we welcome in Paul Feinbaum of ESPN, the SEC Network. Can also hear him right here on WJOX, 2 to 6 p.m., thanks to our friends at Craneworks.
Lift it, load it, grade it, grind it, move it, haul it, rig it, dig it, Craneworks, Rentalworks, yeah! The big dog's got it.
Paul Feinbaum on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning is brought to you by Craneworks. Lift it, buy it, rent it, big dog's got it. And now, Paul Feinbaum.
Paul, always great to have you. And interested, as we had Coach Saban on the show last week, and he referenced last year as a little bit of a rebuilding year. How you heard those comments? What were your thoughts?
Well, I think you just have to decide, Cole, to take him literally or to kind of take a deep breath. And yeah, I think it's well documented that from a strict standpoint, it was a rebuilding year based on the massive numbers of NFL players that he had departing to the first round, including the most obvious. However, I think when you take a deep breath from a distance, it does come off disingenuous. So I think it's a great debate, and I don't think there's really an obvious winner or loser. I know what Coach Saban said in the aftermath. There is no arguing with the stats, but when you've played in 9 national championship games at Alabama, or 8, I've lost track of how many it is, and you've won 6, it just gives people around the country a chance to point at some of his other comments over the years. The comment about when he lost a game, that the NFL draft got in the way, or the one I think it was after the 28-point loss to Clemson, that the coaching staff was in disarray. These are issues that every coach in America deals with, but when Nick Saban talks, he is heard in a more firm fashion, and it sounds louder because he's the greatest coach of all time, and nobody's words are examined more closely than his.
Paul, when you think about this year's team, and you listen to the coordinators this past weekend, it seems like the rallying cry is similar to what it's always been. I mean, whether it's we want to get back, we want to do this, we want to do that. Seems like this year, though, there's even a more of a focus on the bigger picture. And I don't feel like I've ever remembered them addressing potential championships, but, man, it seems like that's all they talk about now. How do you think that's changed? We used to be, one game at a time, one day at a time type of approach. Now it's almost like nobody's shying away from, hey, championship or bust conversation. But why do you think that change has taken place?
Well, I think it's a pure volume. To me, Greg, you can continue to look for examples of where is Alabama at this point, and you had the good fortune of being on the first national championship team. It had been so long since Alabama had won one that fans were happy to be in the conversation. Where now, this reminds me very much, if you go back, I'd say about 20, maybe a little more than 20 years ago on the PGA Golf Tour, when Tiger Woods was literally competing with himself and Jack Nicklaus. If Tiger did not win the tournament, it was a big story. And because he was always in contention, he was always, especially in the majors, and he was the whole story. And I know that others don't want to hear this, but in many ways, when you talk about college football today, there is Alabama and in parentheses, Nick Saban, and everyone else. It doesn't matter whether Georgia won last year or not. It's still about Alabama, because when the polls come out today and whenever the AP poll comes out, Alabama's number one. And I think back to Cole's question a minute ago, that's the part about last year that can't be forgotten, that Alabama was the preseason number one pick in a rebuilding year, which goes to your point that Alabama just they compete against everybody else, but they're really competing against themselves. And that's why Nick Saban always manages to find an edge when they have a disastrous year like last year and finish second in the country.
Paul Feinbaum joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. He joins us each and every Monday. Thanks to our friends at Craneworks. Paul, I find myself previewing this season, looking at this season, the more I conversate with it here on this show or with other people, going to a usual topic, and that is how many teams potentially could compete for, maybe win a national championship, and I find myself offering up fewer teams going into this season than I have the last four or five, and I felt like I had been offering up a very light number of teams in the last 4 or 5 years. Is this as thin of a real national championship contender list that you can recall in your recent memory as far as going into a college football season?
I think it is, Cole. And I think in August we talk to people from around the country, and everybody's got a story to tell if this happens or if that happens. And, hey, if Utah goes to Florida and wins that game, then they have a clear path. But ultimately, these schools have to get past the SEC or Ohio State in the playoffs. And I think that's really the problem. And I think you could make just a stronger case, almost a stronger case, as I should say, for Ohio State to win the national championship here against Alabama. And you're going to hear people say Ohio State's going to win, and it's really not a stretch when you look at what they have on the roster. But beyond that, beyond Alabama and Ohio State, who is the next tier? And by the way, we're in the era of trying to get 12 into a playoff, we're looking for 3 and 4 right now, Cole. And I think you do put Georgia in that conversation, because you know that Georgia has a reasonable path as well. But ultimately, I have a harder time putting Georgia in there as a legitimate champion. I think you can make them as a legitimate Final Four team. And then, do you throw in Clemson? Do you take a flyer on someone else? I can't. And again, I defer to you because you get more inside the trenches than I do. But I just don't see anyone really out. Quite frankly, I think it's a 2-team race. I don't even think it's a 4-team race.
Wow. I mean, even so much as Georgia, you would leave Georgia out of the picture right now?
Well, I would leave them out. I don't think Georgia can beat Alabama this year. I don't know how to say it in any other clearer terms than that. I just think they've lost way too much. And, I think it would be interesting, though, if they play twice again, because it's almost like you want to skip the first game, Greg. Because we found out last year how little. I mean, by the way, you're in Birmingham. How many SEC championship banners do you see on cars and in Walmart? I mean, I haven't seen any when I've been through town, and I think that's ultimately the problem for what happened to Alabama last year. I don't think it would be a problem this year. To me, Alabama is a hair better than Georgia, unless Stetson Bennett becomes a Heisman Trophy candidate, which I'm not going to take him on my list.
But surely you, and based on what you just – I laugh because it's totally fair. I haven't seen anybody, not even a fan, celebrating an SEC championship. And when I played football in the Southeastern Conference, I mean, that was the epitome. That was the ultimate goal. If we could have accomplished that, everything else would have just been nice and gravy. But when you see a 13-win team that had a Heisman Trophy winner, that won their division, that won their conference, that's just – not enough. There have to be points in time where you sat back and you've sort of mentally contrasted where this was 15, 20 years ago when you were covering this team as opposed to just where it is now, and how almost nonsensical it is to have a team accomplish what they did last year and hardly even be celebrated.
No, and I think about a couple of Auburn teams, Cole. I think about that last Auburn team that beat Alabama, when Alabama won the national championship. I mean, these things just happen. And it's really where we are in college sports right now, where, whether you like it or not, it's become more similar to the NFL, where, rivalry games mean a lot on the field, but they don't mean much when the season's over if you didn't make it to the playoffs or win the Super Bowl, than 25, 30 years ago. I mean, when I came to Alabama 40 years ago, the Iron Bowl was really the most important game. The late Ray Perkins, in I think it was in 1983, said this is a game that fans talk about 365 days a year. He said, if you lose that game, you're sick for a year. No, you're not. Not anymore. It's critical. I mean, you could ask Brian Harsin if he'd he wouldn't mind having the Iron Bowl last year, and it would have saved him a lot of heartburn. But these things just don't matter as much. And you know, Spurrier 20 years ago, that was his war cry. All we're trying to do is win the SEC championship, and that used to be a good line. You can't use that line anymore because it's been proven to be incorrect.
It is kind of wild because I remember even when I was playing, y'all, that wasn't that long ago. Shoot, man, it was about beating Florida, winning the SEC. Like, that's all that we cared about. Like, national championships, shoot, man, that's a pipe dream. But, hey, SEC championship, we can get that. And that was, 13 years ago. So it hasn't been that long. It's pretty crazy when you think about how much things have changed. When you look at Auburn, Paul, I've liked everything so far that I've heard for Brian Harsin in the last month. Whether it be the way he took to the podium and said, hey, I want to talk about what happened at the beginning of the offseason, to the way he has even had some tongue-in-cheek moments where he got blasted by AL.com last year. I think completely unfair, the way he was blasted, I might add. Absolutely ludicrous. It was as if someone was trying to exercise some type of grudge, but that's a conversation for a different day. He tossed out some Auburn t-shirts to some media members, not trying to gain their support, but just having fun at practice. Well, he tossed out some this year, and they had a funny phrase on it, like, all I got was this dang t-shirt. I went to Auburn practice, and all I got was this t-shirt. So it looks like he's been reflective this offseason, and he feels like a different guy. What's been your reaction to Brian Harsin so far?
I think Brian Harsin has been a true profile in courage of what you should be as a head football coach. Yes, ultimately, he has to win. We know that. But you're right. And Greg, I'm going to take it a step further. You mentioned AL.com. I'm going to mention the writer's name. His name is Joseph Goodman, and he carried on a vicious, unsubstantiated campaign against Brian Harsin over the COVID shot. And I am not here making medical opinions or political opinions. That's not what I do. But that was his choice, and you can choose to respect it or not. But it doesn't cause for a one man campaign to try to get the guy fired, which I saw on the pages of that publication. And in many ways, they continued and they set a pattern before the guy had ever coached a game. And I think that was terribly unfair. And I like him very much. I think he's a very thoughtful coach. I think he sets a great example. I can understand now why Alan Green bucked the system to try to hire him. But ultimately, you know, that's not what he'll be judged by. But in terms of winning people over that were on the fence with Brian Harsin, I think he has done that. And I think he deserves tremendous praise for taking a road less traveled and taking on those who tried to fire him and taking on those who creeped in the middle of the night like cockroaches trying to get a man fired with no justification and not one scintilla of evidence.
If someone were to hire you in a consulting role for a collegiate athletic department and things of that nature were happening, what would your advice be to a certain head coach that was dealing with those type of actions and how to handle it?
Well, I'm not sure I would have even been as bold, Cole, to tell Brian Harsin to do what he did, because I mean there is such a standard in our society. Just take the hit, do your job, and try to win. But he didn't do that. What I would like, I would like people like that. I mean, I may not be successful in the long run, but at least you've shown something that very few show, and that's part of my issue with the sport. I love the games as much as you guys do, but as Greg and Cole have pointed out many, many times, I spend more time on what happens off the field, and I just don't see a lot of heart. I see too much hypocrisy, and what Brian Harsin did was antithetical to that. It was unusual. How often do you see someone actually speak the truth in a fashion that he did? And it wasn't a rant. He didn't go off. He said it very calmly and carefully. And there's so much disingenuous behavior in the industry from top down. From from preaching about the wellness of student athletes while we're making billion-dollar deals on the with teams flying across the country. And that, to me, took us back a few years to the fundamental principles of what this sport is supposed to be about, but quite frankly, isn't any longer.
Do you think anyone that references the well-being of the student athlete, whether it be conference commissioner, coach, et cetera, do you think they're being disingenuous, Paul?
I don't think they're being disingenuous, Greg, in the sense that they are concerned about it. Yes, I mean, you can't be a head football coach whether you're a sociopath like some who have coached in the SEC years ago to current day and not care about your players. However, I think we use it as code words to try to stay away from the issues that are burning out there. So I can understand the question, and I do think there is concern. But the bigger concern, I think, is keeping up with the next conference in this billion-dollar arms race as opposed to the well-being of a player. Because we both know, we all know, and you guys know it better than I do, that the second a player has no more usefulness, he's gone.
Absolutely. Paul, excellent stuff. Thank you so much for the time this morning, and absolutely can't wait to visit with you again next week.
Can't wait. Thanks, guys.
Paul Feinbaum of ESPN, the SEC Network. Can hear him right here on WJOX. Weekdays, 2 to 6 p.m., always brought to us by Mondays by Craneworks. And he joins us on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.